كانت من النساء جنازنا سلكيا تكسو سملتان جنة تسمع السير بينمها سوي شيطاني منوبيستام ستبيتام جنة بوتلي سيام رقدامايام لذاتي سابنانتيكام Vansikupitrubhyascha kripasindubhai vitra Petitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. We now begin the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In this canto, the wonderful pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and his being saved by Lord Nrisimhadev is described up till more or less from the second chapter to the tenth chapter. At the end of the sixth chapter, the last pastime in the last two verses, in the last two chapters, described how Mother Diti, who is the mother of all the asuras, all the demoniac, powerful demoniac persons, personages within the universe. She was very upset because due to Indra, who is the head of the devas or demigods, Lord Vishnu had killed her two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. So therefore she decided to kill Indra, and to do that she wanted a son who was very, very powerful. And therefore she pleased her husband Kasyapa and with the Pumsa Savana ritual. And we heard about that in the last part of the sixth canto. But just while she was deciding what she was going to do, right before that, Sukadev Goswami said in the 18th chapter, in the 23rd verse, Suka Uvacha, Hatta Putra Diti Shakra Parshni Grahena Vishnuna Manyuna Shukadiptena Jalanti Paryachintaya. So Sukadev Goswami was speaking this verse to Maharaj Prickett. Hatta Putra Diti Shakra. That means Hatta Putra, whose sons were killed. Diti, whose sons were killed. Shakra Parshni Grahena, who was helping Lord Indra. Vishnuna, by Lord Vishnu. So Diti's sons, Hatta Putra, Diti Shakra, Diti's sons were killed by Lord Vishnu, who was helping Indra. So the entire verse says, just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, who were the sons of Diti, Putra Diti. Because of their being killed, their mother Diti, overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, contemplated as follows. And she began her plan how to have Indra killed. So in the first verse of the seventh canto, Maharaj Prickett inquired, "My dear Brahmana," Sukadeva Goswami, "the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, being everyone's well-wisher, is extremely dear to everyone. How then did he become partial like a common man for the sake of Indra and thus kill Indra's enemies? How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and inimical toward others?" Here's Prabhupada's purport. So her question is, how is this possible? The Lord is the Supreme Lord. Aham Bijapada Pita. He is the father of everyone, of every living entity. He is the original source. But yet he took the side of Indra against the sons of Diti, who were the Asuras. How is that possible? Does that mean that he's partial? He's considering friends and enemies? And indeed, later on, Prahlad Maharaj is going to condemn this way of viewing people. Oh, this one's my friend, and this one's my enemy. I'm going to help my friend and hurt my enemy. Prahlad Maharaj condemns this. He's a great devotee of the Lord. So how is it possible that Prahlad's master, the Lord himself, sees in that way and helps one group over another group? So Prahlad Maharaj was bewildered about this. Everyone loves God or has respect for God. He's dear to everyone. God, samoham savabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya. Krishna says in the ninth chapter, samoham savabhuteshu. Bhuteshu, I'm equal to all living entities. Name dvesho, I'm not angry at some. Stinapriya, and no one is particularly dear to me. So how is it possible that Indra influenced the Lord to kill Hiranyaksha, to kill Hiranyakashipu, which we'll hear about in the seventh canto, to take the side of Indra and empower Indra and help Indra kill Vritrasura? So Maharaj Prickett couldn't understand this. Like a child has a friend sometime and then enemies over here and they make little clicks, but it's all meaningless. So is he like a child possessing these meaningless emotions? Here's Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita 9:29, the Lord says, samoham savabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya. I am equal to everyone. No one is dear to me, nor is anyone my enemy. In the previous canto, however, it has been observed that the Lord sided with Indra by killing the demons on his account. Hatta putra diti shakra parshna grahena vishnuna. Therefore, the Lord was clearly partial to Indra, although he is the super soul in everyone's heart. The soul is extremely dear to everyone, and similarly, the super soul is also dear to everyone. Because the Lord is in everyone's heart and He gives life to every living entity. And as naturally, everyone wants to protect themselves because of the presence of themselves, the soul, within the body. So, because of affection for the self. And He is the Supreme Self. So naturally, everyone has affection for Him. The super soul is also dear to everyone. Everyone loves the super soul, and the super soul loves everyone. Thus, there cannot be any faulty action on the part of the super soul. The Lord is always kind to all living entities, irrespective of form and situation. Yet, He took the side of Indra, just like an ordinary friend. This was the subject of Maharaj Prickett's inquiry. As a devotee of Lord Krishna, he knew very well that Krishna cannot be partial to anyone. But when he saw that Krishna acted as the enemy of the demons, he was somewhat doubtful. Therefore, he posed this question to Sukadeva Goswami for a clear answer. A devotee cannot accept that Lord Vishnu has material qualifications. So he wasn't acting as friend and enemy as we would act as friend and enemy. Because that would mean that the same thing that influences us is also influencing him. And what is influencing us? The modes of material nature, maya, illusion. So is it possible that the same thing that influences us to divide ourselves into camps is influencing him? No. So Maharaj Prickett knew perfectly well that Lord Vishnu, being transcendental, has nothing to do with material qualities. Why don't you pour them all out? And we'll have a big rustle. Ah, very good. But to confirm his conviction, he wanted to hear from the authorities Shukadev Goswami. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Samasyakatam Vaishamyam. Since the Lord is equally disposed towards everyone, how can he be partial? Priyasyakatam Asureshu Prityabhava. The Lord, being the super soul, is extremely dear to everyone. Why then should the Lord display unsympathetic behavior towards the asuras? How is this impartial? Suridas cha katam tesh vasau hardam. Since the Lord says that he is suridam savabhutanam, he is the friend, the dearmost friend of all living entities. How could he act with partiality by killing demons? These questions arose in the heart of Maharaj Prickett Maharaj, and therefore he inquired from Sukadeva Goswami. So the first three verses is him asking this question. Second verse. Lord Vishnu himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the reservoir of all pleasure. Therefore, what benefit would he derive from siding with the demigods? Because one chooses sides because one needs something. The fact that one needs something implies that one is lacking something. So one needs friendship, one needs protection, one needs love, one needs that which his group offers, a commonality. So does that mean that the Lord was lacking something and therefore he had a need and therefore he identified himself with a group and therefore fought with one group and because of his identification with another group? So he's obviously, Maharaj Prickett isn't accepting that. So what benefit would he derive from siding with the demigods? What interest would he fulfill in this way? Since the Lord is transcendental, why should he fear the asuras? And how could he be envious of them? Envious, angry, fear. We fear some people in this world because we're afraid of losing something. We're afraid of losing our life, our wealth, our possessions, that which we hold dear. Is God in that category too? Afraid of losing something? Angry at others? Therefore, that's why he sided with the demigods against the demons? We'll read the first half of Prabhupada's purport. We should always remember the distinction between spiritual and material. That which is material is infected by material qualities, but these qualities cannot touch that which is spiritual or transcendental. Krishna is absolute, whether he is in the material world or spiritual world. When we see partiality in Krishna, this vision is due to his external energy. Otherwise, how could his enemies attain salvation after being killed by him? Everyone who deals with the Supreme Personality of Godhead gradually acquires the qualities of the Lord. So Prabhupada is already revealing some of the secrets, some of the answers to these questions. That if we see material qualities in the Lord, this is due to Maya or illusion or the Lord's external energy. If we see that he is siding with one group against another group, this is Maya or illusion. But, as Prabhupada explains, that every one who deals with the Lord, even someone who was killed by the Lord, is benefited. And such a person even gains salvation. And everyone who deals with the Supreme Personality of Godhead gradually acquires the qualities of the Lord. The more one advances in spiritual consciousness, the less he is affected by the duality of material qualities. The Supreme Lord, therefore, must certainly be freed from these qualities. Simple point of logic. If one who associates with the Lord by chanting his name, seeing and serving the deity, eating prasadam, hearing the Bhagavatam, living in his holy dham, associating with his people, the devotees, if they become purified, because that is association with the Lord, if they become free from duality, if they become transcendental, how could it be that the one that they're associating with is afflicted or infected with duality or mundane qualities? No. So the Supreme Lord must therefore be freed from these qualities. His enmity and friendship are external features presented by the material energy. He is always transcendental. He is absolute, whether he kills or bestows his favor. So he is coming from the absolute platform. So now gradually we're going to get a proper understanding of the Lord's position. He continues with this question, Maharaj Prickett does, asking Sukadeva Goswami, O greatly fortunate and learned Brahmana, whether Narayan is partial or impartial has become a subject of great doubt. Kindly dispel my doubt with positive evidence that Narayan is always neutral and equal to everyone. So he knew the answer, but he wanted to have his doubt, based on what he's heard, cleared up. So is Krishna neutral? Is he favorable to the demigods, opposed to the demons, favorable to his devotees? And if he is neutral, why does he award one person mercy and another person punishment? Is that the vision of neutrality? If a judge who is deciding cases decides always for one group of people and always takes their side against another group of people, will everyone trust that judge? If he's merciful and kind and compassionate to one group and he punishes always consistently another group, how will that be viewed? Because when the vision of justice, there's a statue, at least in the United States, they use of justice, is a... There's the scale, and also justice is blind. The one who's holding the scale, his eyes are blindfolded because the judge has to judge everyone equally. He's blind or doesn't see who he's judging. He has to judge according to principles beyond the individuals. So this is his doubt. How is it that the Lord, who must be the supreme judge, he's the witness, how is it possible that he takes the side of the demigods against the demons? Awarding, being merciful to one, kind to one, answering the prayers of one, and punishing the other. So now, in verses 4 till 12, Sukadeva Goswami is going to give some philosophy that explains the Lord's position as transcendental, beyond material consideration. And then he's going to, from 12 onward, he's going to tell a pastime of Maharaj Yudhisthira and something that occurred at the end or prior actually to the sacrifice, the Rajasuya sacrifice that Maharaj Yudhisthira performed. And then the question that Yudhisthira asks, Sukadeva Goswami tells that pastime, and we hear Yudhisthira asking Narada Muni a question about something that occurred there, something quite amazing that occurred there. And that question leads to Narada Muni telling a story. And that story is the story or the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and his father, Hiranyakashipu, and how Hiranyakashipu is killed by Lord Nisringadev, who is the Lord. So there's three parts. There's Sukadev, which we'll now hear, speaking philosophy. Then there's a pastime where Yudhisthira Maharaj, who performed the Rajasuya sacrifice, is speaking to Narada Muni and asks Narada Muni a question about something that occurred in the Rajasuya sacrifice. And within that, there is another story, because Narada Muni answers his question with the story of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Nisringadev. But first, we'll hear some philosophy, because we're going to, in this canto from chapters 2 to 10, we're going to hear about the advent of Lord Nisringadev, who is Nara Singha. He's lion and man. Singha, lion, Nara, man. And the Lord comes in this form and he rips apart and kills Hiranyakashipu to protect his devotee Prahlad. So if we don't understand the Lord's position, we're going to misunderstand this pastime. We won't understand this wonderful, wonderful pastime, which reveals so much about the Lord, about the devotees of the Lord, etc. So we're going to hear some philosophy spoken by Sukadeva Goswami first that explains the Lord's position, which directly answers this question. So there are from 4 to 12, and I'll read the verses in English first and maybe speak a little bit, and then we'll discuss them and read Prabhupada's purports. So the sage Sukadev Goswami said, the great sage Sukadev Goswami said, so he's beginning his reply in text 4 and 5. My dear king, you have put before me an excellent question. Discourses concerning the activities of the Lord, in which the glories of his devotees are also found, are extremely pleasing to devotees. Such wonderful topics always counteract the miseries of the materialistic way of life. Therefore, great sages like Narada always speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, because it gives one the facility to hear and chant about the wonderful activities of the Lord. So he's so happy to hear this question. Why? Because it's giving him the opportunity to discuss the Lord, his pastimes, and the Lord's dealing with the devotees and how the devotees act. And these topics are so pleasing, and they destroy the miseries of materialistic life. And therefore, great devotees such as Narada always speak about the Lord. They always speak about Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Because when one speaks, one's mind is focused on the Lord. And one's hearing what one is saying. So it gives them the facility to hear and chant about the Lord, and it gives others the facility to hear about the Lord, the wonderful activities of the Lord. And he concludes his verse by saying, he's going to begin by saying, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Vyasadeva, and then begin describing topics concerning the activities of Lord Hari. I'll read this purport and then we'll move into the philosophy. In this verse, Sukadev Goswami offers his respectful obeisances to Krishnaya Munaye, which means to Krishna Dwapayana Vyas. One must first offer one's respectful obeisances to one's spiritual master. Sukadev Goswami's spiritual master is his father, Vyasadeva, and therefore he first offers his respectful obeisances to Krishna Dwapayana Vyas, and then begins describing topics of Lord Hari. Whenever there is an opportunity to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord, we must take it. Whenever there is an opportunity to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord, we must take it. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends Kirtaniya Sada Hari. One should always engage in Krishna Katha by chanting and talking about Krishna and hearing about him. That is the only occupation of a Krishna conscious person. In his Paramatma Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami says, he comments on this verse by saying, describing the Lord's glories is the great happiness of devotees. And I have something also from Paramatma Sandarbha here, commenting on this verse. Jiva Goswami says, my dear king, in this verse it is said, my dear king, you have put before me an excellent, well-considered question. The glories of the Lord are wonderful and without precedent. The Lord's activities are wonderful because even though he is supremely impartial, the Lord is still partial to his devotees. Then the Lord declares, so that is a wonder in and of itself. The Lord is impartial. He is not partial, but yet, even though he is supremely impartial, and we'll understand after how that supreme impartiality takes place, still he is partial to his devotees. Prabhupada explains his point in the Bhagavad Gita by saying, just as the owner of a factory may be impartial towards all his employees, but to his own son who may be working there, he gets special treatment and he is partial towards that son. That is not partiality, Prabhupada explains, that is natural. So in that comparison, the devotees are his special sons. Why? Because the devotees are living in their relationship with God. They're living in their relationship with him. Even though everyone is a son of God, everyone is a part of God and has a relationship with him. How many people are living in that relationship? How many have taken hold of their birthright? And is anyone blocked from that? No. Every son, every jiva, every living entity, being a soul, part and parcel of Krishna, has a right to awaken their relationship with him. And then take up and get the Lord's partiality in that way. So he continues. Even though he is supremely impartial, the Lord is still partial to his devotees. Then the verse declares, by hearing about the Lord's activities, a person increases his devotion to the Lord. The word Bhagavata Mahatmyam, from the verse Bhagavat Bhakti Vardhanam Yad Bhagavata Mahatmyam, means the glories of Prahlad and the other devotees of the Lord. In this way, it is seen that the Supreme Personality of Godhead always acts for the benefit of his devotees. It is not otherwise. This conclusion will be clearly explained in later parts of this book, meaning of the Sandarbhas. And then he quotes from the commentary of Srila Sridhar Swami to this verse. Svabhaktapakshapatena tadvipaksha vadaranam shringam madhutavande paramananda vigraham. In his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 7.1.1, this verse, or excuse me, on the first verse of this chapter, Srila Sridhar Swami prays, I bow down before Lord Nisringa, whose wonderful form is filled with transcendental bliss, who was the partisan of his devotees, who is partial to his devotees, and who rips apart anyone who becomes his devotee's attacker. And then in the next... Okay. Now we'll begin some philosophy about the Lord, and I'll read these philosophical verses, seven verses. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, the Lord, is always transcendental to material qualities, and therefore he is called Nirguna, or without qualities, because he's beyond material qualities. Because he is unborn, he does not have a material body to be subjected to attachment and hatred. Although the Lord is always above material existence, through his spiritual potency, he appeared and acted like an ordinary human being, accepting duties and obligations apparently like a conditioned soul. So the Lord, who is beyond all material qualities, who is actually unborn, he comes and unmanifests to our material eyes. He comes to the material world, swamaya, by his spiritual potency, not his illusory potency, his own internal energy, his yogamaya. He comes to the material world and acts as if an ordinary human being. And therefore Krishna's lila, or his activities, are called naralila. They're like human-like activities. But humans are not under the control of their own energy. They're being controlled at every moment by the illusory energy of the Lord. And Krishna is transcendental, unborn, not touched by attachment and hatred. Text 7. My dear King Parikit, the material qualities, sattva-gun, raja-gun, and tamagun, all belong to the material world and do not even touch the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These three gunas, qualities, ropes, cannot act by increasing or decreasing simultaneously. So the way that the material modes act on we who are in the material world, there's goodness, there's passion, ignorance, and guna means quality, guna means rope, and we are tied up by these ropes, these qualities. And just like a rope, when you want a rope to be very strong, you don't keep one strand, but you take three strands and twist it, and then the rope is really unbreakably strong. So similarly, the rope of material nature is twisted into these three strands of goodness, passion, ignorance, tying us up very tightly. And they're always moving. Sometimes goodness is dominant. Sometimes passion is dominant over goodness and ignorance. And sometimes ignorance is dominant. So we see this every day. Sometimes, the mode of ignorance, we can't even move. Oh, we have one thing in our mind. Oh, we have to do it. My gosh. Can't even think. And then sometimes we can't lie down, we can't sit down. All we have to do is run here, run there. We can't stop, practically speaking. And other times we feel very, very peaceful. And depending upon the modes, our particular combination of the modes of material nature we individually have, we'll have proportions of these. And sometimes during the day or one day, one goodness will be dominant, another time ignorance or proportions of passion, like this. So in this way, they control us in their increasing and decreasing in their simultaneousness. But these gunas do not touch the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the quality of goodness is prominent, the sages and demigods flourish with the help of that quality. So the quality of the qualities affect the world, individuals and the world, and also not exactly affect the Lord's pastimes, but they play a part in that, but we'll speak about that after. So when the quality of goodness is prominent, the sages and demigods flourish with the help of that quality. with which they're infused and surcharged by the Supreme Lord. So the Lord is the controller of those qualities. Similarly, when the mode of passion is prominent, the demons flourish. And when ignorance is prominent, the yakshas and rakshasas flourish. One sees this. If one, early in the morning, there is a different feeling to the day, very early, very, very early, and certain living entities are up, certain humans are up and in a particular mood. And then as the day goes on, the passion increases and a different type of living entity flourishes. And then at night, at midnight, of course in Perth they roll up the sidewalks and turn off all the lights, but in some certain cities of the world, if you're up late at night, 1 or 2 in the morning, there's a completely different atmosphere. In late at night, at 1 and 2 in the morning, and it's very, very heavy and demonic. So different living entities flourish when the mode of ignorance is prominent, when the mode of goodness is prominent, or the mode of passion is prominent. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so this is all the energy of the Lord, and He is transcendental above that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart, fostering the reactions of sattva-gun, goodness, rajagun, passion, and tamagun, so, and ignorance. So he's allowing this to happen by His energy, sarvasya chaham videsana visto. Text 9. The all-pervading personality of Godhead exists within the heart of all of every living being, and an expert thinker can perceive how He is present there to a large or small extent. How much is He manifesting Himself? Just as one can understand the supply of wood and of fire and wood, the water in a water pot, or the sky within a pot, one can understand whether a living entity is a demon or a demigod by understanding that the living entity is understanding that living entity's devotional performances. So there is fire and wood, even though one may not see it unless one is learned, unless one knows the science. There may be water in a water pot, but if one looks from the outside, if one doesn't have knowledge, one will only see the water pot and not see the water. And the same with sky, air within a pot. Or one, if there's a pot, and a person says, "What's in the pot?" And so, "Oh, it's empty." But is it actually empty? No, it's full of air. So billions, and it's full to the very, very, very top, and even overflowing with air. So similarly, a thoughtful man can understand within a person, depending upon how much of the modes of material nature he develops, he's manifesting. One can understand what's coming out of the person, the modes of material nature, or ultimately devotional service, he'll understand how much the Lord is being kind to him. Of course, it's not just the Lord who's partially doing that, but He's just reciprocating with the desires of the living entity. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead creates different types of bodies, offering a particular body to each living entity according to its character and fruit of actions, the Lord revives all the qualities of material nature, sattva-gun, rajagun, and tamagun. Then as the Supersoul, He enters each body, influences the qualities of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, using sattva-gun for maintenance, rajagun for creation, and tamagun for annihilation. So, in the universe this is true, how the Lord enters and uses the modes of material nature to create goodness, passion, and ignorance, to maintain and to destroy, and also within the individual. So He is working His energy either through the material nature according to the fruit of activities, the desires and characteristics that a living entity, karma that a living entity has, or as we'll hear about in a few moments, in his own pastimes, he also manipulates the energy so his pastimes can go on free from actually under his spiritual nature as opposed to the material nature. So he's using, he's above these things, he's not touched by it. So why does he act in this way? This we'll hear about a little later, but now we can understand, as explains in the 11th text, O great King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of the material and spiritual energies, who is certainly the creator of the entire cosmos. He creates the time factor. This is how he does it. He creates the time factor to allow the material energy and the living entity to act within the limits of time. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is never under the time factor, nor under the material energy. So he is beyond that. He is beyond all this. He himself is acting by his own power. Sambhavam yapma mayaya. He descends to this world by his own power. And in the world, and in the individuals, everything is acting by the power of time. Impartially. And then in the final verse in this section, O King, this time factor enhances the sattva gun. Thus, although the Supreme Lord is the controller, he favors the demigods who are mostly situated in sattva gun. Then the demons who are influenced by tamagun are annihilated. So he's saying through the natural course is that the demons through sattva guna, or the mode of goodness, this is enhanced by the Lord. And then when that occurs, then the demonic forces are annihilated by the demigods or good forces. The Supreme Lord induces the time factor to act in different ways, but he is never partial. Rather, his activities are glorious. Therefore, he is called Urusrav. So, Urusrav means, by the word by words, whose glories are widespread. So whatever he does is ultimately for everyone's good. And the pastimes that he's, the stories, the pastimes, the leelas he's going to narrate will prove that, will show that. How when the Lord acts, it may appear partial, but actually it's good for everyone concerned. So that's the philosophy that's spoken. Now we'll explain it in a little more detail and read Prabhupada's purport as well. So in text 7, in text 6, Nirguno Api Hi Ajo Vyakto Bhagavan Prakriti Para Swamaya Gunam Avishya Bhadya Badakatam Gata. So the Lord is Nirguna. He has nothing to do with the qualities of the material world. Again, he is unborn. He is unmanifested to the eyes of materialistic people. And Bhagavan Prakriti Para, he is beyond the material energy. But he enters Swamaya by his own potency. He enters this world. And Bhadya Bhada Katam Gata. As if he was a being, if he was obliged by, like an ordinary conditioned soul, but that is not his position. So his activities are actually going on by his swamaya. Prabhupada's explanations mostly covered the Lord's being transcendental to this world, and he is not under the material energy, yet he controls the material energy, the three modes of material nature, through his time factor. But when he comes, so this is the general principle, but when he comes to the material world to perform his activities, the time factor is there, controlling the modes, but it's Krishna's energy that makes the pastimes occur. He takes advantage of the particular modes of how time has made particular modes dominant. So and therefore sometimes the mode of passion is dominant, even in Krishna's Leela. And therefore we see, and we heard with Vritrasura, sometimes the demons terrified and defeated the demigods. So this is an increase of one of the lower modes of material nature. So when the mode of goodness increases, the demigods overpower the demons, the demonic forces. So even in the Leela, this is what, and we'll hear this even more when Vamandev appears. Because Bali Maharaj, the demonic forces of Bali Maharaj will completely defeat and drive out the demigods. But what happens when Krishna is present is he takes advantage of these changing modes of material nature that change to the time factor, which is under his control, and he puts his own energy into that so that the Leela can take place. And when he wants the demigods to win, he empowers with his own energy the demigods. And when he wants the demonic forces to become stronger, he empowers the demonic forces with his own energy. This is all taking place. This is really, this is Leela. This means Krishna is playing with his energies. And this is ununderstandable to non-devotees when they if they don't hear about it properly. So Krishna himself is above. And when he comes to the material world, he's never actually in the material world. When he's dealing as if a cowherd boy in Goloka Vrindavan, he's not a cowherd boy. He's acting like a cowherd boy. And nor are the cowherd boys that he's playing with. They're not cowherd boys influenced by the modes of material nature. This is all going on by the sweet flow of Krishna's internal energy, called Ladini Sandini Sambit. This is all Krishna's energy just playing, and on a completely different level than is going on in the material world. And this energy is filled with the highest bliss. And when this energy moves to the material world, and it makes the modes of material nature work, when the living entities are touched by the spiritual energy reflected through the material world, it causes misery for the living entity. But that misery doesn't exist in the Lord. So this will be explained. There's one verse from the Vishnu Purana that comes out and the Prabhupada quotes in his purport that explains that point. Ladini sandini sambit twareka sarva samstito. These things don't exist in the Lord, but when they're reflected, when the spiritual energy is reflected into the material world, it causes within the living entity, it becomes the Maya Shakti, and it causes the miseries of the living entity who are conditioned. But at any moment, they can jump out of that material conditioning and take shelter not of the material energy, but take shelter of the spiritual energy. At any moment one can do this, but what does one have to do? One has to give up the false ego. Because the material energy controls we who are thinking that we are meant to enjoy the material world. Purusha prakriti stohi punti prakriti janiha. We have false ego. Karanam guna sangasa sadasa joni janmasu. Soon as we want to be the enjoyers, the controllers, and give up our relationship with Krishna, we are placed in the prison house of the material energy. And soon as we want to get out and be under the very sweet spiritual energy, and as soon as we surrender to Krishna completely, then we're in a completely different realm. With this realm, this material world is a reflection of that realm. So the process of bhakti yoga is the process of getting out, of gradually or quickly, depending upon our capacity, our sincerity, our desire. There's a process of transferring which energy we are controlled by, the spiritual energy or the material energy. So much of that process is hearing. So Krishna comes to the material world to show partiality to his devotees, and we'll discuss this more tomorrow. Even though he is impartial, he is showing he is partially active for his devotees. Okay, we'll stop here. So we discussed something about the philosophy of these verses, and then a little of the in text 6 week. It's a bit of an overview of how the Lord deals with his pastimes. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
What's the definition of ego?
Identity. So there's two egos in the terms we use. Or sense of self. So ego means that sense of I am that we all have. And in the material world, we don't have our real ego. We have a false ego. Even though we have a sense of self, it's not really who we are because it identifies with the body. The sense of self is based around the body and the mind. And also based around the concept that I'm not connected to Krishna. So it's false, it's illusion. So it's a false ego. The impersonalists think that the goal is to remove all sense of self. Because this false ego causes us so much trouble, so much pain. It causes us rebirth. It causes us being in the mood of friends and enemies. It causes us to feel so much need in the world, because we feel inherently our lack. So we're always desiring things that really won't fill the lack. That causes so much pain. So the impersonalists wish to remove all sense of self, and the devotees just wish to remove the false self so we live in our real identity. Remove the covering over who we are, remove the illusion. And so we live in our actual identity. Okay? Is that clear?
Well, when we have desires, do we go to a different planet?
It depends what our desires are. We can't stop desiring. If we desire things of the mode of ignorance, we go downward. If we desire things of the mode of passion, desire, 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 we stay in the middle planetary systems. If we have very pure, sattvic, good, pious desires, we go upward. And if we have desires to serve Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, we can leave the material world completely and go to the spiritual world.
But although we desire, we ask Krishna for certain things.
We should ask Krishna to become a pure devotee. That's a certain thing. Or do you mean if you desire a good job, good health, for parents and permanent residency. Those kind of desires? Is that kind of a thing? Did you mean?
No, some kind of, you know.
Like what?
Yeah, it could be. You know.
Okay.
But does that lead you to spiritual?
The kind of desires I mentioned?
Yeah.
Does that lead you to the spiritual world? Does it? Are they spiritual desires or basically selfish desires? Are they based on Krishna, serving Krishna?
Based on self, serving somebody else.
Serving me. False ego. False. They're based on the false ego, so that won't lead us upward.
So can the desire be transformed?
You better.
In a spiritual desire,
you have to, yes. So this is the difficulty in the material world. You know, I'm teasing you a little bit, but we all have so many material desires. So how to take those material desires and transform them, lead them in the right, push them in the right direction, so that we can get rid of our material desires and only desire and love Krishna. That's the process of sadhana bhakti.
Does that mean that desire activity can be transformed into spiritual activity?
Yes, that needs guidance. We can't stop desiring, and very much, unless we're very, very special, we can't stop desiring materialistically either. Self-centeredness. So how to transform our self-centeredness into Krishna-centeredness? That takes guidance. But we must put Krishna in the center. Because if we don't do that, we have to stay within the realm of false ego. Everyone in false ego has a false self in the center. And in spiritual consciousness, we have real self in the center. And who is the real self? Is the servant of Krishna.
Well, when we chant, we get all these desires at our stage. See, for example, a person reaches the 14th round, 15th round, that time he desires for Krishna. But in the beginning of his chanting, he's got all his desires coming up.
Material desires.
Material desires. All kind of, you know.
Your chanting is quite good. After 14th round, you only desire Krishna. You should chant 64 rounds a day and see what happens.
What I want to ask is, how can we get that? Like every day when you chant, you don't get that attitude for a baby crying for a child, for a mother.
Become purified.
How to get that attitude?
How to become purified?
Means how to get that attitude every day. Like
how to become purified? That's that attitude, is the natural attitude, the natural pure attitude of a soul. Everything else is a covering.
But because of the material desire, that attitude never comes.
The process of sadhana bhakti is to remove the covering so that that attitude is our natural consciousness. The process is to remove all the coverings, everything artificially placed on top of that. But everything we do is leading towards that. From chanting, worshipping the deity, waking up early, refraining from meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, associating with devotees, taking prasadam, offering things to the deities. These are all meant to purify us, to help us remember Krishna, and help us remember our relationship with Krishna. So this is the whole process. You want to say, how can I have it right now, but without paying the price? Gradually, our wealth increases.
This is in text 12, that the time factor enhances the sattva. What does that mean?
We'll talk about that tomorrow, if that's all right. I mean, the time sometimes enhances sattva-gun, sometimes it enhances tamagun, and therefore, as the Bhagavad Gita explains, the modes are always fighting for dominance. One, sometimes the mode of passion is prominent, sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent, and this is sometimes the mode of ignorance is prominent, and the time factor makes one prominent or another. But we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Just to follow up Parag's question, basically, to put it in other words,
yes,
merely by mechanical devotional practice, you know, but the mind is all over the place all the time, merely by doing that, it is not enough to develop, to advance in spiritual life, but one has to consciously make an effort to really want that advancement in spiritual life. Is that what the meaning is, Prabhu?
There's different stages, certainly. So when one who is consciously making an effort to love and serve Krishna, that's a more advanced stage than one who is mechanically doing it. And one who is mechanically doing it is in a better stage than one who is not doing it. And one who is not doing it but doing good things is in a better stage than one who is not doing it and doing bad things. So there's so many different stages. And above desiring is a person who is desiring greatly and greater until that desire is burning so, flaming so hot with such hot desire that it burns up every other material desire that one has. That burns up every material desire one has. So there's different stages. Was that more what you were?
Yeah, but what I want to say is, the thing happens that if you are materially involved, if you desire something in Krishna consciousness, to be more Krishna consciousness, at the same time a desire comes which tells you that you've got to be materially conscious also very much. So there's always a conflict. Like, if a person materially involved person...
It's like if you have a desire to go left and a desire to go right at the same time. Okay. So you could walk down the middle, but unless you know where you're going, you might end up in the water. Right? So you need guidance to know how to deal with that. But most people can't just decide, I'm going to walk right, I'm not going to walk left. I'm going to give up everything and only serve Krishna. Most people can't do that. If one can do that, then a person who is guiding that person will help him do that. Sometimes we decide, okay, I'm going to walk right, I'm not going to walk left, I'm going to give up everything and serve Krishna. And then after about 2 weeks or maybe long, we think, uh-oh, I think I made a wrong turn, and we go running back and go running down that road even faster, the materialistic road. So it has to be done under guidance. Yes, there's a conflict between the spiritual and the material, certainly. So what we usually will happen is we have, under guidance, we learn how to use our materialistic desires. For instance, we have a desire to make money. So how to use that tendency so it doesn't lead us away from Krishna, but it will lead us gradually towards Krishna. It may not be quite as fast as someone who can give up everything and just serve Krishna, but at least we'll be going in the right direction and not in the opposite wrong direction. So what should a person do who's in that situation, which is generally all of us? There's principles, basic principles, but what the application of the basic principle are there to an individual and what his particular situation and capacity is.
Is it karma yoga?
Is what karma yoga? It depends on the individual. Do you know what karma yoga is? That's nishkam, that's a particular type of karma yoga. But it's time to go. Good questions, but the kind of questions that we that there's a general answer to it, but how should you act specifically, you as an individual, which it seems to be the way your questions go, what should I do considering this is my position? You have to find someone who you completely trust that they're going to lead you and direct you so you get back to Krishna, knowing who you are as an individual. They're going to give you the proper medicine and diet and treatment so you can get back. So you have to find someone, take their prescription. That means guru. Yeah? Because your questions tend to lead in that, what should I do? Here's my situation. So we give a general answer, but for you, what you should do, you need to go to the doctor. It's a good doctor. Find yourself a good doctor. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.